We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the study session of the University City City Council to order at 5:31 on November 23rd, 2020. Prior to Mr. Rose taking over for the code enforcement update, do members of council, I think you've had an opportunity to review the agenda. Are there changes to tonight's agenda that you'd like to discuss prior to the meeting? Hearing none. Mr. Hudson, you are muted. You are muted.
I'm back now, and I'm just wondering if Council Member Clay, were you going to wait for the agenda item on the at the meeting, or did you want to make that request now? In reference to agenda item I-1.
No, I was going to talk at the meeting during the agenda item. There's no change that needs to be made now.
No, thank you. All right. Thank you. That's it.
Okay. Hearing no changes to the
I have a follow up to Mr. Smotherson about the appointment to the Civil Service Board.
Yes. I was going to wait to do it then.
Oh, okay.
But that's okay. That's okay.
You can make a change then, but you're wanting to delay that one, am I right?
Yes, that's it. That's the intent, is to delay it.
Honorable Mayor, if I could just interject real quickly one of the options that you have is to approve the appointment and to delay the seating. I believe this is in reference to a matter that is currently under review by the Civil Service Board and trying to keep that unit intact during that time period.
Good. And Mayor, you can't hear you. You can move a little closer. You can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
So a phrase that is now so part of our vernacular. Can you hear me now? Mr. Hales, Mr. Smotherson, are you okay if you make the nomination with a delayed swearing in?
That's fine with me, if that's okay with Councilman Hales. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right, let's move forward with the rest of the study session agenda.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, there have been several changes that are underway regarding how we are approaching code enforcement. If you recalled several months ago, we added, that was the area that we added the electrical vehicles in trying to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to reduce our carbon footprint. There are other activities that are going on in code enforcement, and tonight, Director Clifford Cross is going to present you with a presentation on some of those activities. It's really an opportunity for us to get your thoughts and input and direction on how we are proceeding with trying to improve that operations. Mr. Cross?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Rose. Good evening, City Council, Honorable Mayor. As Mr. Rose had touched on, we're starting to look at some expanding some of the ways the code department addresses code violations. And what I mean by that is, how do we start to separate the occupancy inspection side from the actual code enforcement side where you have violations that exist? So what staff is going to do tonight, I want to run through a quick presentation and kind of get you up to date on some of the activities that we are doing and some of the things that we're looking to do and seeking your input to move forward as we start to roll into 2021. Because before you know it, the spring's going to be here and we're going to be fighting the grass and stuff like that again. And we want to be more proactive and ready to address it. Before I get too much into the presentation, I think the biggest thing that y'all are aware of, and we thank you, is the new software. It's been a little slow rolling out because we found a lot of things we've had to clean up in the actual code itself that we're taking this opportunity to do it, but it's going to be ready. And I think it's going to really show its effect and we're going to become much more efficient and be able to be more proactive in addressing violations throughout the city come 2021. So I'm going to attempt to share my screen here and present this slideshow to you and then take any questions that you may have. Can you see that?
Yes.
Good, okay. So as Mr. Rosen, I had indicated, we're just gonna kind of get you up to date on where we are with the department and how we're moving forward. So just a general quick breakdown of the department, what we currently have. We have the director, myself. We have four administrative staff, which consists of three full-time and one part-time. Those are the secretaries and the permit clerks. We have one senior plans examiner who reviews plans and is the supervisor of the three multidiscipline inspectors, which are basically our building inspectors, electrical inspectors, and plumbing inspectors. And we've been able to keep up with them, but that is a little bit of a reduced staff to what we used to have. But with the new software, we think that's going to allow us to continue at those numbers in terms of the building side of things. We have our one lead code enforcement officer. I know many of you know Tim Scott. He is the supervisor of the five code enforcement officers. And as you know, those officers basically do all of our occupancy inspections, our residential occupancy inspections, but also spend a lot of their time addressing the exterior code violations that you see out there. That's grass, garbage, and various nuisance types of issues that you see out on the exterior of properties. So the director, I oversee the department, but I also am the zoning administrator. We used to have a zoning administrator, we do not. So I do all the day-to-day zoning activities. I also do the long-range planning, and that's associated with our neighborhood plans and our comprehensive plan that you've heard us talk about quite a bit lately. So I would play a vital role in the development of that comprehensive plan. I'm also the code official. So some communities call it the building official. I'm the code official, so I am actually make the final calls on all building permits and code issues that go through this department. We have our building division, which consists of that senior plans examiner that does the plan review and inspections. So we do a majority of our plan reviews in-house. Sometimes if you get a specialty, we have to ship it out. But I think one thing we're going to be doing this year is we have to rewrite our building code. Because of our ISO insurance service organization rating, we need to get that done. And we're also gonna evaluate the building permit and plan review fees because we need to bring them up to speed to our cost to perform those and bring us to a much more comparable rate to some other communities. We have those multidiscipline inspectors, that's our building inspector, our plumbing and our mechanical and electrical inspectors. And then we have our code division. That's the senior code enforcement officer, and they do the occupancy inspections and the property maintenance. We also do animal control. We've looked at options. We may even look at an option of in the future somehow contracting that out to where that would free up one of the code officers who spends a lot of time addressing animal control and pulls him away from exterior violations. Over a year, we traditionally average somewhere around 4,898 inspections. It's either driven by an application or it's a complaint type of violation, or the officer just catches it while they're out in the field. A majority of them consist of the exterior nuisance issues, 2,936 environmental exteriors that we address. That's grass, garbage, derelict vehicles, and so forth. That are commercial vehicles. We have 898 exterior building violations. That's usually something like a gutter falling off a house or steps falling apart, something to that effect. And we had 50 interior violations. Those are traditionally, even though it only says we do 50, those don't account for the ones that they catch as part of their occupancy inspections. These are just complaint calls or some call that we catch that we identify as an interior violation. There were 70 outstanding violations that we addressed last year. That was some of our proactive cleanup of things that quite honestly we caught that were the ball was dropped because of our software. And we've done an audit to try to try to find those things that haven't been followed through on and follow through on them as we move forward. 649 derelict vehicles, 16 illegal storage of commercial vehicles, and then 188 animal related types of issues. As a result, we average somewhere around 1,852 abatements and issue 763 citations over that same time frame. And abatements would mean we get a contractor out to cut the grass. When you look at the exterior violations versus the occupancy inspections, we look at this and some of our deficiencies, and we estimate that roughly 70 to 75% of our code officers' time is spent on occupancy inspections. And the obvious deficiency there is if they're inside doing application-driven inspections, they're not outside addressing exterior violations. They can't be as proactive in addressing them. We did lose a couple building inspectors last year, one as a result of a retirement, the other one a result of unforeseen layoffs due to the COVID. And to keep up, we do have a code officer that has assumed some of the roles and been working to get a building certification. So that individual has done some of our building inspections as well. So of those five code officers, we only have one of them that is doing some, at least part-time building inspection as well. So we're really down to 4.5 code officers across the board. What we do is we do recommend separating the assignment of the inspectors to do exterior violations only, which means we may need one, or we're going to request one, or at least one, and most likely two additional inspectors is our recommendation to improve the department efficiency and being more proactive in dealing with these code issues. So what's that mean? Means we're having a change of our mindset in this department. And I think people have heard me in the past say that we've become a little bit action-driven and not proactive. So the goal is to pull away from the reactive code enforcement where you call in or a citizen calls in a complaint and try to be more proactive to identify those violations prior to that, or at least stay on top of them. Now, we're always going to need the assistance of council members, citizens that live in neighborhoods that see things that we don't see to give us an update. But our goal is to become more proactive and reduce that to where we're more assertive in identifying the code issues out in the field. And then once it's observed, we want to have a better procedure to follow through on it. And that's what the software is going to do, in that it's a workflow system that if they're given a 10-day notice and they don't comply, I'm notified if the case is not closed out, so I can hold my inspectors much more accountable for dropping the ball.
Mr. Cross, if I could just interject one mm-hmm. issue at this point. When I was here in the late 90s, we had code enforcement officers that were patrolling areas. And as a result of that, I think we had a much more robust housing, and the housing quality of housing here, I believe was improved because of a more robust code enforcement. That's what we're proposing to get back to, where we will have our code enforcement officers that are actually patrolling. And so we are not completely reliant on either the residents or the council advising us when code enforcement problems exist, where we should have those people in the field identifying those problems.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Even though we do have our deficiencies, and Mr. Rose is correct, we want to be more robust, we have made some progress in 2020. And I think the visibility of the electronic vehicles out there has really helped out. So people and citizens know we're in their neighborhood. I go back to this when the biggest thing is going to be the new software. It's a workflow system, and it's just going to, the accountability and the ability of the software to keep us on track is going to really improve the department and our overall efficiency. The code cleanup, we've identified some of the issues in terms of the code needs just a lot of cleanup. A lot of things have not been updated through the years, and quite honestly, are not haven't been effectively implemented. The other big thing is the nuisance declaration process. I know they did this back when Mr. Rose was here before, and they just kind of got away from it. You know, we got in a position where all we would do is go out and identify a violation and issue a citation, and then it would go to the court. Court would close it out, and then we were probably dealing with the same issue a month later. So the nuisance declaration is a process that we've started to do to basically really keep the pedal to the metal, so to speak, on these absentee landlords or these chronic nuisance properties. We've just obtained our first set of demolition orders within the last month and a half. We're starting to move forward to where we can start to actually complete some demolitions and remove some of these vacant, dilapidated, and abandoned properties that cause havoc throughout some of the individual neighborhoods. So overall, what does that mean? This is that we're becoming more strategic. You know, we want to become a much more strategic code enforcement department and really utilize all the resources out there that are available to us. We want to, you know, we want to be data driven. We want to have good collaboration. We want to coordinate. Software is going to help us do that. And we want to work with our proactive leadership. So I wouldn't be surprised if we don't come back to you in the near future with some proposed amendments to move forward with some of our strategic ideas that we're looking to move forward with throughout this department in 2021. So to do that, we have to develop a strategic code enforcement plan, which is what we're working on. And I think you all got a copy of just a summary that I had put together. And Adam Brown, by the way, had helped. We had started on this when he was here as well. So he put a lot of input in this as well. But the primary goal of our strategic code enforcement plan is to really provide community outreach, focus on the residential deficiencies out there and how to address it, utilize software, a database, the GIS, make sure they're talking together, have a resource list for individuals. And I'm going to go through each of these real quick to kind of explain what they mean, but a resource list, because we have to address, not that homeowners get a pass, but a longtime homeowner that may be struggling due to finances and they want to do something with it, but they just don't have the means to do it. Our goal is for compliance and not penalty. Our goal is to work with those homeowners and try to help them get their properties where they want them as well. So that resource list, we think, provides an avenue to help do that. One of the big changes that I've seen as compared to what you have here is a rental license program as opposed to an occupancy program. Because with an occupancy inspection program, every time a tenant changes, we go out there. That might be every 4 months. And what is really out there that we're looking for? I mean, is it really the best use of our inspector's time to have them going out there looking at the same thing they looked at 4 months ago? Or do we want to go to some sort of annual rental license program where we are in each rental unit at least every 2 years to look at it? Because I can tell you right now, if you have a tenant in a place for 9 years and we've only been in there once when they originally came in 9 years ago, I'd be willing to bet there's a lot worse issues with that property than there is the one that changes every 4 months. So that there's pros and cons of both, but those are some options we'll be looking at. We are looking to better address nuisance properties, specifically the vacant ones. And this came up briefly in our housing program. And some of the things we're doing is getting the nuisance declaration and the demolition. One thing I am looking at is how to get a hold of a receivership to get a hold of these properties much quicker so we can look at potentially selling them. I am looking at a model that Kansas City, Missouri has utilized. I believe it's chapter 56 of their property maintenance code that has an option for a receivership. And these are some things I'm gonna have to work with John and his folks because they go directly to the circuit court. We do our hearings here through me and then they can appeal to the circuit court. So that I have to see how that process is going to work, but that's going to be something we're going to look at doing. We need to incentivize development. If we get a hold of these properties in one way or the other, do we group them and do an RFP and provide incentives to private investors to put houses back on the market that fit into the neighborhood? And then the last thing is the housing programs that we touched on at our last work session to better utilize those programs through CDBG and home funds. So the community outreach, as I said, I'll run through these real quick because I know we want to have some questions, but this is where the code officers go out and they cite a homeowner, for example, and the homeowner wants to address it, but they just either mentally or physically unfit to do that or financially just don't have the money to do it. We want to be able to work with them to assist them to try to resolve their issue in a big issue without penalizing. The residential, this goes obviously as a concern because I know we touched on it the last study session. We need to identify what's a healthy balance of rental versus homeowner and then be able to address them accordingly. You know, we want to make sure that the housing stock fits the neighborhood because quite honestly, we have to because the rental properties have increased in the city and we need to identify them and then figure out what's the best approach between rental and owner occupied and what, you know, to improve our overall housing stock throughout the city. The database, this goes back to the GIS. We're becoming much more proactive in using it. And then we want to create our housing database, as we talked about at the last study session, to determine what housing, you know, what our inventory of housing is, what our needs are, and then identify a plan to better move forward, either through a neighborhood plan or some sort of overall housing plan. We need to create that resource list, which I think I did provide you guys in your packet. But this is the list that would help the seniors and the disabled. A SHED's a classic example of an organization we can work with to help people who need assistance to resolve their property maintenance issues. The rental license program, this goes back to the, you know, do we want to do a rental license as opposed to an occupancy program? The beauty about the rental license program is I think we can better incentivize it. I've looked at some, and I've actually implemented a rental license program where I came from. You know, we can better educate our landlords. We can provide incentives for our good landlords. We can somehow write that into the ordinance. Maybe we only inspect the non-bad landlords, and if that's the best way to put it, maybe their annual inspections are every 3 years as opposed to every 2 years or something to that effect. And ultimately, the goal would be to reduce the occupancy inspections and make more time for the inspectors to enforce the property maintenance issues. And the reason I think the exterior, being able to address that is much more important is because as a homeowner, you don't always get to choose who lives next to you, but a tenant gets to choose who they live next to, if that makes any sense. So we want to make sure that we're protecting our homeowners through better tenants and better landlords to preserve the integrity of the neighborhoods. Nuisance properties, we've got the process for our demolitions. We've got funding to start, thanks to the funding approval you gave us earlier. So we'll be ready to start several demolitions in the very near future. And then we need to identify partnerships that once we take these properties down, if we foreclose on the lien and get control of the vacant lot, then we may have lots at the very least to work with the Habitat for Humanity or other private entities to do some infill housing. Some of the other tools is to incentivize the development through the RFP and our housing programs we talked about at the last meeting. So this is just the chart that I provided you, and this just kind of breaks down what I'm going to put in the strategic housing plan and kind of an implementation schedule that we've talked about and staff. And this, what this does is this, you know, it talks about the overall creation of a code enforcement manual. I think that's very important because, say, I'm not here and I plan on it, but say I'm not here in a year, Mr. Rose isn't here and council's not here. At least there's a consistent manual that's in place that hopefully will continue to build upon the things that we do and keep us on the same path so there's not a complete 180. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have. I know I ran through that pretty quick, but be happy to answer any questions that you may have, and thank you.
Thank you, Cliff. If you could remove from sharing your screen, then we can see who has a desire to ask a question or make a comment. Are there members of the council, Mr. Smotherson?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor Crow. Mr. Cross, I just wanted to ask the question about rental license because I think I like the idea of reducing occupancies and actually spending more time looking at property maintenance. But how do we get that applied? What steps do we need to take to get that option and make that part of a standard process and procedure that we adapt?
It would be an amendment to Chapter 240. We would write it in there. The beauty is I've already written a draft, so it's not something I have to start all over with because I've been kind of working with it the same time I've been working with our building inspection amendments. So, that would be an ordinance amendment to Chapter 240.
Okay.
Back it up. Sorry, we've got feedback from somebody. I'm not sure who's got more than one machine on. Stacy, Mr. Clay.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Crow. Director Cross, I appreciate the presentation. A couple things. As it pertains to renters, I know there's been a lot of conversation, renters necessarily versus homeowners, but renters and homeowners is separate categories. And while there is some evidence to point to that our the preponderance of our nuisance properties tend to be rentals, the work we do in improving those properties is at its core for the benefit of the renters. We want to make sure that those folks are enjoying the same level of home that our homeowners are too. And so I just wanted to make that clear. I know that's the desire of you, Director Cross, but I want to make that clear to those who are listening. We want to make sure that our renters have a high quality of home as well.
Sure.
As it relates to just a question, you under articulating your duties listed several things, long range planning, zoning. Is economic development going to continue to be a part of your portfolio as you're managing this, the reformation of code enforcement?
To my knowledge at this time it is. The one thing about
let me interject just a little bit because I'm not so sure that's his decision to make. Right. Where I certainly appreciate and value the oversight that Cliff has provided for economic development, and think that he has an extensive background in that, which has helped out quite a bit. Still evaluating long term. What the structure will be, not just for economic development, but for communications as well. When it was placed up under Mr. Cross, the intention was for it to be temporary during the COVID period. So it's a little premature to indicate at least where I would recommend that it ultimately, who would have ultimate responsibility for that. And so Mr. Cross and I have not had the discussion about kind of where it would be long term, nor have I talked with any of you as a council.
Okay. So understood. This is just very ambitious and I think needed. This is something that the council and certainly Smothers and I have been thirsting for. So we want to give all due attention to this process. Couple more things, Mayor. Vacant property versus occupied property. We've had many conversations about expediting the code enforcement process as it relates to vacant property. And certainly was glad to hear you talking about supports for occupied properties where folks may be legitimately struggling, wanting to do the right thing, but don't have the resources to do so. But can you say more about your vision of expediting code enforcement for vacant properties and what that would look like?
Well, it depends. The nuisance declaration process, being on it quicker. I mean, there's still a process we have to follow from the hearing standpoint, where we condemn the property, and that doesn't necessarily mean we're tearing it down. Condemnation just simply means that it's nuisance and right. It's chronic and there's an issue. But then what we do, we have to follow the pre-hearing notice, where we send the notice out and give them 21 days. And then we conduct the hearing. And once the hearing's done, then they have a 30-day appeal period. So you're talking minimum of at least 2 months. But I think us being more proactive and not sitting on the ball and becoming more fluent in how we do it is going to speed up. But right now, we automatically have that 2 month time period. There's nothing the way the current code is written. But that's where I go back to the court, circuit court. Is it faster to just file directly with the circuit court and then let the circuit court issue the order? That's the way I've done it in the past where I came from. We would just go directly to the circuit court and we would just file the complaint, whatever it would be. We would actually go through the, and then we would record it, which we do record our pre-hearings here. The reason being is we need to make sure we record them, because anybody that's looking to buy that property, or ironically, you got Bob's Trust LLC becomes Bob's Brothers Trust LLC the first time. Right. You give them right. A notice and you got to start the clock again. So what we do is we record it over at St. Louis County, which quite honestly hadn't been happening in the past. That way, it's their fault when they do it. They should have done a title search and they can't run from us. So just clean up and identifying the deficiencies and becoming more streamlined, I think, is really going to help. But we right now we have that 2 month gap. That's it. Until we change the ordinance, that's what we got.
Okay, we'll talk more. We'll talk more offline about that. I'll defer to my colleagues.
Questions do we have for Mr. Cross? Mr. Cusick.
Thank you, Mayor. I actually have two questions for Mr. Cross and one for Mr. Rose. Mr. Cross, thank you for your presentation. When you talk about this, developing this nuisance declaration process and the what can be done about vacant properties, what about and considerations for people that have violations, but they don't have the wherewithal or the means to get on those repairs as necessary? What about those landlords that have multiple properties throughout University City, two family flats, four family flats, et cetera, and they're doing what's known as gaming the system, where they know that they have violations, but they don't do anything about it. We send them letters for them to do something, and they wait till the very last minute to do these repairs. And apparently in some of the neighborhoods, this is a consistent problem with some of those landlords that just rent out their properties and don't really take care of them. Is anything going to be done about that, or are you aware of this?
Yeah, that's exactly what we're doing with the, we're putting pedal to the metal, so to speak, just the issuance of a citation and then an abatement, say for example, for grass that we end up paying to mow, just quite honestly, hadn't been followed through in the last several years. And that's what the new software is going to allow us to do. It's going to help us better track and identify these chronic nuisance violations of these landlords. And quite honestly, when inspectors don't follow through, and I'm not knocking my inspectors here, but when inspectors don't follow through, a lot of times staff, me, I don't know until I get a call and I say, well, I thought that should have been done 2 months ago. And I manually go back and check it. So the new system will automatically have a calendar that says this time is up, this has not been resolved, and I can more proactively stay on top of it.
And if I could, also, I was just going to also add into what Mr. Cross was stating. I think it's two parts. One was certainly our ability to follow up on citations or notices that had been issued. The second is really to take a very hard look at our process and determine should we be providing a notice to an individual that has already been noticed in the past. And I would argue with you that we should not. In fact, we're looking at changing our process to, if you have received one notice, then you are aware, you should be aware of the violation or those type of violations occurring. I think that in the past, we've become somewhat of babysitters, that we were noticing people for every violation that we identified. Now we need to move away from that. If you receive one notice, that's good. But after that, we should be going right to citation, because you knew or should have known that you needed to maintain your property.
Okay, thank you. And then a follow-up to that, correct me if I'm mistaken, but I thought we appropriated funds maybe a year ago for this computer program. Have we been utilizing it? And I thought notices were going to be sent out starting then. Have we not been sending out notices and following up on those?
Following up on the new software program was expected to be implemented in late around summer, August, but with COVID, it was slowed down. There was a gap that we're working. So we're still using the MyGov software. Notices and everything still going out. We haven't gone live with the SmartGov yet.
Okay, when do we think that'll go live?
That will be live by beginning of 2021.
Okay, and then a follow-up to that for you, Mr. Cross, what about the derelict vehicles? It's apparently not only derelict vehicles, but illegally parked vehicles on people's yards. Are we going to be doing anything about increasing our patrols on that?
Yeah, that's the purpose of separating them where I can have them out. And they're basically with the proposed addition of an additional code officer, that would be their primary responsibility. If you remember, we hired one code officer back in June of 19 that was solely dedicated to that. And we've seen an increase in those types of violations. The intent was to hire a second one here in 2020. I think we came back to you just before COVID hit. And then when COVID hit, we just didn't have the ability to do it at that time. So the answer to your question is, ultimately, if we split these responsibilities out, there's going to be many more. I would project 3, maybe even 4 that are solely dedicated to various areas throughout the city, and that's all they do. Nuisance issues.
Thank you. And then if a final question for Mr. Rose. Mr. Cross alluded to being down. I know that he said he was down one inspector, but do we have any plans to replace the lost inspectors and get him back up to working at full capacity, or are we still working in pandemic mode?
Well, we're certainly still working in pandemic mode. The intention is to look at where we are financially in January, and then make some decisions. One of the pleasant surprises was the county's providing us with CARES funds. And so I believe that the use with those funds will be able to bring back some of the critical positions that we had to lay off. So, but I'll be looking at that in January, bringing a recommendation to you as a council in late January.
Thank you very much.
Fine.
First of all, thank you for the presentation. And I really appreciate that there was consideration given for people that might have trouble meeting the code because of, you know, age or, you know, other considerations. One of my questions is, are there, you know, we talked about the one warning or, you know, giving notice. So are there special considerations for people who may be in, you know, a difficult financial position? You know, maybe they can't, they don't have the money to get their vehicle licensed or, you know, to fulfill the code requirements?
I will defer a little bit to Cliff, but I can tell you that generally our goal, as Mr. Cross has indicated, is to gain compliance. each situation is going to be different, but the end result has to be the same, that they must comply with our codes. Mm-hmm. I think that's why we're looking at stronger partnerships with not-for-profit organizations, so that if someone is struggling, a senior or someone that's disabled, we have a we can refer them to this not-for-profit for service. But I can say that yes, we are sensitive to that. But even with being sensitive, there still must be an acceptance that they must comply. I'll defer to Mr. Cross. Anything to add?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, that becomes a little bit more of a case by case where we can review it. But what I can say is, our goal is compliance, and I don't camouflage it. A homeowner who's been here 30 years and is not on the radar every other day is going to get much more consideration than a landlord that we're chasing all over the place, or someone. And I'm not knocking landlords, but you know, you have good landlords and you have your absentee landlords, and you have landlords that you know, you got to do everything, and we're gonna identify those landlords. And those landlords are going to comply. Is our intent, and we won't be as easy to work with as we would with a homeowner.
Councilmember, I was just going to add to that. I think there's an opportunity for through the various resources that the city has to support those not-for-profit organizations that do that, that would provide that support in the community, similar to what you do with the EDRST funds now. You support the market, and that's on the nutrition side, but I would suspect that's the very reason that you provide that support, so that the residents have an opportunity to purchase high quality food at a lower price than what they might otherwise pay.
Okay, thank you. And I have one more question just about, are there any special trainings for the inspection for the officers in terms of de-escalating problems that might come, you know, with confrontations when people get really tense about code enforcement?
International Property Maintenance Code, which is basically administered by the International Code Council, they have trainings. In fact, the staff went to a webinar training last Thursday. They all put them at different areas, and they all have their annual training and certifications. I think one of the things to note is they're required to do continuing education, and they're all certified, where a lot of communities are not. We require them to be certified within a certain time frame of being here. So I can't think of any specific training, but I know ICC has legal aspects. They have, you know, they have working with the public types of things. So yes, there is that training out there, and I'd be happy to take a look at it and ensure that they take that training.
Yeah, I just think sometimes, you know, people can get negative impressions about the city because of those kind of altercations that could be avoided. So
right.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Questions or comments actually from me, if I could. I hope that Cliff and Gregory will give us probably a longer conversation, if you will, or information on the pros and cons of the rental licensing program. I think I may be the only one who was on years and years ago when this, John may remember this, when this came up, when Julie Fire was our city manager, and it was a idea to license the rental units and to charge a fee. And I will tell you that though there was some dialogue with the landlords, that was quite a response we got, particularly from the larger landlords that were realizing how much it was going to cost them to do the licensing. So I think that's a point to remember. My question of you comes actually a little bit differently. And when we're talking, you know, we sometimes think that I assume the newer buildings are probably easier than the older buildings, but I'm not sure that's true. We sometimes think the larger landlords are easier than the smaller landlords. yet we've seen in St. Louis where some of the larger landlords have fully taken inappropriate advantage of the system and have become, in essence, slumlords that don't do anything. So my question of you folks is, I'm not sure there's a broad-based way that we determine whether based on age of property, location of property, size of property, size of landlord. I'm not sure we've got a good handle on who the problems are, who the strong landlords are. Am I correct in saying that?
Well, I see a couple that come across my desk regularly. So to answer your question, I don't know if there's a system completely in place, but our truly problematic landlords that you just really do nothing, we know who they are, or we deal with them on a regular basis.
Are they normally folks who own a sixplex, a 12-plex, a whole bunch of duplexes, a whole bunch of single-family homes? I'm just curious as to, is there any profile there?
No, I haven't seen it. The ones I saw are mostly, they handle a lot of the, this is what I find. Most of the 2 to 3 units or 4 units, that's where I think you see a lot of the issues in the 2, 3, and 4 units. The single families traditionally are someone who maybe moved away, is renting the house, can't sell the house, or it might not even be a landlord. It just may be an investor or bank has bought a ton of properties and they may not even know they own it, that sort of thing. So it's not always, I guess I got to be careful when I say landlords, because a lot of the single family housing stock is not always associated with the landlord. It's associated with the absentee owner of the property and the fact that they have a property manager that doesn't keep up on it. They don't know about the issues. So we don't have an inventory, but I'd be happy to start to look into it and kind of get you better data.
I do think we should learn from what we did several years ago and see what the miscues were when we tried this a decade or so ago, because it did have some, it definitely hit some bumps in the road.
Mayor, the intention would be to bring that back to you for consideration. It was just mostly introducing the concept this point to see if there was any merit to move at least further discussion, further research on.
Well, I think there's a lot of merit to it. There's a lot of merit to it 10 years ago. It probably makes sense as to how we allocate our resources. It's just trying to, we probably need to just watch the minefields that we'll be walking through. So are there other questions? Mr. Smothers, oh, wait, sorry. Mr. Hales has not gotten a bite of the apple yet. Mr. Hales.
Thank you. I want to be as brief as I can. I wanted to touch on something that hasn't been mentioned, and that was the slide about the putting systems and process in place. I have had a lot of experience with this department over the years, and I will tell you that I cannot appreciate more the effort to put in place processes, because I have witnessed that they have either fallen by the wayside or sort of been lost at some point, at some time over recent years. So very pleased with that. The one concern, and it doesn't warrant a response right now, the demolition authorizations, and I know, Cliff, you mentioned an alternate path. There are certainly properties that could warrant demolition authorizations in all three wards, including the first ward, which I've talked to you about. There are some houses that honestly are probably beyond saving and salvaging, and then there are some houses that definitely are worth. So I just want to make sure that there is a process or some set of standards to determine the viability of salvaging a home and whether it's something that could be saved versus being torn down. And if we could acquire the property through some process, that would be good, because I know that we have some neighborhoods and some properties that I'm aware of that kind of fall into this condemnation demolition process, that I think the neighbors would like something done, but they wouldn't necessarily like the house demolished for its historical value and the character, potential character it adds to the neighborhood. And then finally, on the timing complaint to abating a problem, you mentioned it takes about 2 months. How much has COVID delayed that timeline right now?
Well, it delayed it initially because we, quite honestly, we weren't being able to conduct the hearings. Now we've set up a process to do it. Like, for example, we had social distancing when we had our most recent ones back in, I think it was September. So it shouldn't impact now where it has impacted a lot of stuff is with through the citations that were issued, the court wasn't going full bowl. The other thing it did initially impact was when the circuit courts were closed. If we would have got the orders back then, there was not an opportunity for that individual to appeal the decision of the code official with the circuit court. So that could have caused some issues. But short answer to your question is now there shouldn't be any issues with COVID. We should be fine moving forward.
Thank you.
Brotherson.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor Crow. Mr. Cross, just a quick statement and kind of a question, maybe not a question, but one of the things that I'd like to see happen in reporting what happens with when we initiate this come 2021 is that a lot of this is broken down into wards. And the reason I say that is because we specifically need to see the impact of what we're doing by ward, per ward, so that we understand how this is impacting the first ward, second ward, and for me, the third ward specifically. And a lot of times, for instance, I'll give you a perfect example, the demolition list that you had of houses or properties wasn't broken down by ward. So I can't really tell how we're impacted by that, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, the new software will do that.
A lot of this needs to be broken down by ward so that we can really understand what we're dealing with, if that makes any sense.
The new software and the reporting of it, that's the other thing. It's another reason why it's taken a little longer is I want to be very careful in how we design the reporting so we can get you the most up-to-date information. And the new software has that ability to basically filter. These are the number of derelict vehicles. It better utilizes the GIS is what I'm saying. It targets specific areas. And I can pull that information out to say we've addressed 227 vehicles within these four blocks of this area or this neighborhood. So it allows for better filtering and reporting to you.
Okay.
Other questions of Mr. Cross or the city manager as we wind down the study session? Hearing none, Mr. Cross, thank you for joining us. Mr. Rose, as always, thank you. We will take a brief break and then be back for the public session in approximately 5 minutes. Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you.